You're listening to the Vegans Explore Network, found at vegansexplore.com.
Hey, everybody, this is Sean Russell. We are here right now, the Vegans Explore podcast, and today we have a special guest. We have Kwame Tera, who is the CEO and founder of Bear Health Systems. We're so excited to have you on this podcast because we are going to be like sponges absorbing all of your knowledge and all of your expertise and your lived life, so that way we can make everyone who's listening or watching all the better for it. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah, Sean, thanks for having me.
All right, so we usually like to kick things off before we get into the reason you're here, get into what you're up to right now. We like to go back a little bit, just give people a little bit of context to who they're listening to right now. And we call this segment our vegan origin story segment. So this takes us, we like to call it vegan origin story because like every superhero has their origin story. So what was that for you? What were those seeds that were planted that brought you to even consider this lifestyle?
Yeah, I can't say that someone's ever asked me my vegan origin story in that way. So excited to see if it's an exciting origin story. So the tipping point for me deciding to commit to a vegan lifestyle was, I believe, late 2014, early 2015, whenever Cowspiracy officially released. That was the final tipping point for me. And you know, you could really say that that is the gist of my origin story. But to make it a little bit more exciting, I'll go back a year before that, where I was studying biology as pre-med at Xavier University of Louisiana. And during that time, about 2 years in, I was introduced to research. So my first 2 years, I was focusing on becoming a doctor, pre-med student. Then I got an opportunity to do research at UCLA. And studying the Mindful Awareness Research Center. And basically what the Mindful Awareness Research Center is, it's a study around meditation, a study around the influence and the idea of presence and the influence that that has on your health and spirituality and all aspects of health. But just a really cool department at UCLA that I got to be a part of for 3 months. And so I was studying psychoneuroimmunology, which is basically how your mind and your behavior and your thoughts influence your nervous system and influence your immune system. And I'm like, oh, you know, I'd always had these intuitions or instincts that, you know, my thoughts influence how I felt, not just, you know, emotionally, but on a deep level, like even cellular level. And so it was really cool to see or be a part of that research. That can more or less confirm that as a reality and in a way that we can measure it and understand it. So after I studied there, I was so inspired and my mind was so opened because, you know, just learning things specifically around like neuroscience about, you know, how much of who we are, what we do is influenced by things outside of our control and that we aren't perceiving. So I just got really curious about like, well, what else am I wrong about? Right? Besides, you know, what I thought my thoughts were, for example. And so then I, the following semester, so I went back to Xavier for, you know, to continue my studies there, and at Xavier University of Louisiana in New Orleans. And I signed up for 5, you could say, mind challenging courses. So I signed up for Intro to Neuroscience, Intro to Philosophy, Psychopharmacology, Physiological Psychology, and Intro to Biblical Studies, all in the same semester. So I'm taking 5 classes that you could say at least open up your mind a little bit. And I went and continued my studies there. And there was one day actually, but that really opened my mind up a great deal, where the next day I woke up and I felt like I was here for the first time. And I really regard it as like a spiritual experience that I had. But then from then on, I just started questioning everything and I felt more connected to everything. I felt more connected to everyone's emotions and their motivations. And then I also just started questioning everything that I did that day and for the several weeks following, where not just like questioning what I was doing, but really why I was doing it. Like, what's the purpose of it? And one thing that started to emerge was this sense of, like, how am I contributing to suffering, Right. And again, this is something I was just organically immersed. It's like, yes, I'm doing these things for these reasons. I'm eating for this reason. I'm, you know, showering for this reason. Like, I'm talking about the basics, right? Because I was in this intro to philosophy class, and that was, I think, part of what they were talking about there. And then I got to food, and one kind of insight that I kind of had was, well, what do I need to, like, why am I eating food? So I'm eating food because I need to sustain myself. Okay, well, what do I need to sustain myself? Okay, I need these nutrients. Well, can I get these nutrients from plants? Yes. Do I need them from animals? That's what I'm accustomed to, but can I get them without it? And then again, that's where the suffering component came in. Well, it's like, okay, I think the animals would prefer that I didn't kill them, just based on my own, you know, perception of myself as a living being. Like, I think they would probably prefer it. And since I don't need it, why do I eat it? Now, that was, the original seed of my vegan journey. And that was fall of 2013. But it wasn't until I watched Cowspiracy in, I think, January of 2015 that I made the commitment to the journey. And that was 11 years ago.
And congratulations on, you know, making those connections, because I feel like what's often not said, especially when these origin stories, is that it's not about one moment. It's seeds being planted along the way and one thing piling up onto another thing. So, you know, especially people who may be watching this who are trying to encourage people to move into this lifestyle, you know, your words have power, you know, and it's a big part of how you show up as well. And you touched on something that I don't feel we always have at least on this podcast, we don't always get to have the conversation on presence and mindfulness and understanding and being locked into the now. Do you want to touch on that a little bit, on how that plays a significant role in this whole conversation?
Yeah, I mean, it plays a significant role in my life now. That experience and those reflections from then on have really shaped who I am today. I would say I was changed by that experience at UCLA. And again, just being able to put words to what I would experience on my own. I used to meditate and visualize before baseball games in high school. I would, like, go sit on the foul line and just, you know, visualize myself making diving catches or, you know, hitting the ball into the outfield. And, you know, I didn't really know what I was doing or what I was, you know, where that was coming from. And I was the only person doing it, like, on my team, you know. But in speaking of the power of now, when I was a junior in high school, I read The Power of Now.
Yeah.
Interesting, I wasn't as moved by that as I was by A New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. That, you know, in some sense can be regarded as a Bible for mindfulness, for presence, for the now. I would even say even more so than The Power of Now. I feel like The Power of Now was a little bit more commercially, you know, commercially viable. But A New Earth really, really put perspective around our relationship to one another. And what mindfulness does is it reveals what our relationship to one another is. And what's explained in the book is that we are all on some level part of a whole. Or most of us perceive ourselves as something separate from everything around us, and on a perceptual level that's true. However, on a real level, it's not necessarily true. So again, so that was junior year of high school that I read that book, junior senior year of high school, and that really resonated with me. But I didn't really have much of a framework around belief, because I grew up Muslim in a very Christian environment in Houston, Texas, and then my dad became atheist when I was 16. And I actually didn't know that you can choose your religion or belief at the time. You know, I'm still new to this, and so I tabled it for a second because, you know, that just sounded a bit confusing. And then so I revisited or was reintroduced to it when I got this opportunity to study at UCLA. And everything that I guess had been in my mind, in my heart, in my spirit, where that all of these things that I've been wrestling with were put into words and put into perspective again through that experience. My biggest takeaway is that, again, we are all part of a whole. Not only are we not separate from what, you know, everything around us, we're not separate from what we are. There's this kind of the conversation or discussion or common theme around, like, there is something, like, you are something separate from what you are, like, in your physical body.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't know the absolute truth here, but this is my current interpretation, that we aren't anything separate from what we are. Because one of the most powerful things that I learned about when I was at UCLA was the fact that if you just push on one part of the brain, you can change a person. For example, the shooter at UT, who was a normal person, and then all of a sudden he's extremely violent and he's shooting people from a tower at the university. It turned out he had a tumor pushing up against his amygdala.
Mm.
So is he a bad person? Does he now have a bad soul? Right? Or did something just significantly change and materially change in his brain that led to different patterns of thinking, different actions? And I think when I share that idea or that concept with people, people are a bit offended because we identify with ourselves. That's the ego that Eckhart Tolle is always talking about, that he that was shattered in his experience. And I think that's more or less what happened to me when I learned took all of those classes. I was learning way too many things at one period of time that were challenging or poking holes in my current framework, conscious or subconscious framework. And then once that happened enough, then I was able to be open to a new experience, really become a new person. I think that mindfulness and presence and now is the path to the truth, and peace. And peace, not only in the sense of like being relaxed, but in the sense of, again, recognizing that you're part of a whole, and talking to you is just like talking to another part of, if you're talking to someone else, is like talking to another part of yourself. You start to regard people in a different way. You also like lose the capacity to judge.
Mm.
Because your default is understanding. Right. And when you understand, you then accept. And it's not I accept and I think this is something that should exist necessarily. It's just I'm no longer resistant to it. I understand it and I know how to move through it. And so it's literally why, if my company didn't succeed, I would wake up tomorrow and go on a run and say hi to my friend. And, you know, because it's not like, what am I trying to say? I'm just at peace with my existence. And that is one thought away once you understand what you are and how you relate or connect to everything that is.
I mean, this is like my favorite topic to talk about. So we're going to end on this. We may bring it up later in the conversation because I do want to get into that next chapter of your life, bringing us to Bear Health Systems and bringing us to the Bearathon. So we're going to talk about that, but I want to say this conversation I feel needs to be had a lot more in this space, because I feel like whenever someone asks me, why am I vegan? I say I'm vegan for compassion, because, you know, and that for me, it feels like an umbrella for everything. And then I can just, I'm being compassionate. I'm not acting in as a compassionate person. And I do that personally for a number of reasons, because I know who I can be when I'm not grounded, when I'm not, you know, I can easily slip into that. So this daily practice of the food that I put in my mouth, of how I treat other people, how I communicate the message, how I deal with the resistance that comes with me, I feel a big part of my training and the support I received was outside of the vegan space, was in that world. The Eckhart Tolle, there's some names I can't say anymore because of the e-files, but the people that are out there right now that have talked about this message for the longest. So I'm glad that you shared that with the audience, because I feel like it needs to be said from a lot of different voices, because you could be for the animals, you could be a hardcore animal rights activist, but I feel like there's this a level of self-awareness that gets to be had in terms of seeing how you're showing up, where that's coming from. And not to say that those feelings are bad and wrong, but just to know, because on the other side of it is the marketing and communication aspect, which is where we are firmly rooted. There's a way to communicate to attract instead of repel. And sometimes that's necessary in certain instances. But when do you pick and choose those instances? So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, and just a quick note on the hardcore animal rights activists. I'm not of the mind that, like, oh, we shouldn't be doing things in such an antagonizing way, because the reality is it's evil, right? It doesn't land as evil in most people's minds, like what we're doing with animal agriculture, but it is. And so I think most humans' natural response to things that they perceive as evil is outrage, and it should be. Strategically, though, obviously it's not always the most effective, and it's an easy out for a lot of people who don't actually want to create change at all. But yeah, I say keep, you know, standing in front of LBMH or, you know, whatever. I don't know if they're not vegan or not, but these designers and stuff like that. And yeah, keep doing it. I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
And I think you nailed it. It's strategic. It's strategic movement, because we're all, even though that is an aspect of the activism, we need to start looking at it as a broader movement, because when you start having people come into the movement, they need to know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if there aren't people waiting for them to kind of be hospitable of like, okay, you walked into the room, now here's where everything is. You know, there has to be that balance on there as well. So I think there's room for us to have a bigger conversation regarding, and even outside of the vegan stuff, it's just like, there's so many things that have happened in my life that if I wasn't grounded with some of this knowledge, not some of it, like there's obviously things I don't know, that things could look a lot different. Speaking of looking a lot different, when you got, that was just a segue I wanted to put in there for no reason. When you started to move towards Bear Health, I want to know, from where you left us to Bear Health Systems, take us through that journey. How did you get there?
Right after the part of the journey I just finished sharing about UCLA and whatnot. So I pivoted from wanting to go to medical school to wanting to go to graduate school and study neuroscience. I applied to about 4 or 5 programs. I didn't get into any of them. I did get an interview at Vanderbilt. But being in at that interview really put things into perspective for me, you know, of how challenging it really is to be in some of these environments. You know, obviously people from around the world are applying for this PhD program, whether they're straight out of undergrad or, you know, they've been in the workplace for a while. And, you know, I was one of 22 students selected for the interview. I forget exactly how many students they ultimately select, but I think it's under 10. I was the only Black person there. There was maybe one or two other women, one other minority, but it's just, you know, they had thousands of people are Black from around the world. And here we are, and it's like, man, this is a tough game. And so one thing that I took away from my research experiences was that we already know a lot.
Hmm.
You know, I'm curious to always be learning, because you know, that's one of the most sustainable ways to stay engaged with life, because to your point, like, we don't know everything. And so learning is really engaging, exciting for me. And what I will do once I'm done building my wealth is just go study and learn as much as I can. But when I started getting interested in research and realize how much we already know and how much better we can already make it if we just apply what we know right now, that's when I started learning about, you know, the issues within our systems, right? And again, similarly, around the time that I was introduced to Cowspiracy, I would say that's really what triggered me not only to, you know, commit to a plant-based diet, become a vegan, but really just to, once I know better, do better in general. How do I set up my life to where I'm not contributing to this system that I don't believe in, this model that I don't believe in? And so I started an organization called Full Disclosure, Be the Change. And I think, you know, it was one of those, probably like an early, you know, influencer models for, you know, different types, different platforms. And so I would basically share information and, you know, encourage people to do better once they knew better. And then, and most importantly, I would just be modeling it. And that led me down a particular rabbit hole that I think most people end up down once they do enough research, which is that like everything you touch is contributing to something that you don't support. and the natural, you know, landing point of that journey is nihilism and cynicism and anger and frustration. And you're just thinking, oh man, I can change the system. And eventually just, you know, when you try to lift things that are too heavy for you, you can get injured. And I think that's what happens to a lot of souls who are so, you're so disturbed by the evil in our systems, the evil in some humans' hearts. And that's why I think it's important to bite off something that you can chew, which is more or less what I've gotten to now, where, you know, we're not entitled to anything in life. We're not entitled to humans being good. We're not entitled to, there's nothing we're really entitled to, like on a you know, metaphysical level, like in reality. There are these ideals that we're entitled to, human rights and things like this. And I subscribe to these, I support these, I want these to be the mainstream, and I want everybody to support these things. We assume that a lot of these things will just be granted to us because, you know, other people are good. It's not necessarily the case, obviously. And a lot of the ideas that I'm sharing right now are really what flipped me to being an informed optimist. Mm. Getting strategic. Once I realized that I couldn't really participate in the system without contributing to something that I didn't support, I then Googled how to live with no money.
Mm.
And I came across an organization on a forum called Willing Workers on Organic Farms. The acronym's called WOOF. I'm sure lots of people in the audience have heard about this. And so basically it's a work exchange program where you work a couple hours a day on a farm or in a garden or, you know, wherever somebody needs help related to agriculture. And in exchange, you get room and board for, you know, however long you plan to stay. And so I did a couple experiences. I did one in Houston, where I grew up. I did one in Nashville for several months. I did one in Berkeley area, or two actually in the Berkeley area. And you know, I really, really enjoyed those experiences. But one cool thing about it is that the majority of the farmers that I stayed with were like 80-year-old civil rights activists, like white civil rights activists.
Mm.
Both of them were just telling me stories about their experience, like marching with MLK and participating in the march to Moscow. This guy's name's Carl. He lives in Nashville. He's probably still around. He's probably 88 or 89 now. He's a vegetarian himself. And, you know, he really does it to educate people. You know, he doesn't necessarily need help tending to his garden. He's an urban farm where he grows all of his food. And anyway, he shared some perspective with me, let's say, where it really helped me move from, again, informed cynic and nihilist to, you know, we're just not entitled to something. So anything. So he told me a story about how, you know, that he had this one plant growing in his garden, and then he had this poisonous vine also growing.
Hmm.
And he said, well, you know, as the poisonous vine started to grow, it started interfering with the other plant's ability to grow. He said, the plant can't just go to the plant god and say, hey, stop this.
Hmm.
Right? and then maybe they stop, or maybe, you know, but all that a plant can do is figure out how to thrive despite circumstances. And it was really in that moment that I think probably first and foremost understood our reality, our current society, in a way that I could accept it and move through it confidently, optimistically. And again, it's that same theme that I've been sharing, so that we're not entitled to anything except for the right to try and push for what we believe is best for us and the people we care about and the people around us. And so I regard any system or entity or person that does things that interfere with my ability to grow and thrive as a human being as that poisonous vine. They're not wrong. They have their agenda. They have their aim. They're entitled to that aim. I have a different one. And in the end, the one that will sustain and prevail is the one that puts the most effort in and gathers the most people around it. Ultimately, the best idea that leads to the most, you know, survival and thriving of people. So that is my worldview in a sense. It's like there are things that are moving this way and things that are moving this way. Something is going to prevail, and I have nothing to lose in going after what I want.
And then how did that bring you to starting Bear?
So that was 2016 to 2018. I was kind of, you'd say, finding myself. I was reading a lot. I was doing these experiences on the farms. And then I moved back to New Orleans. So I had actually ended up moving to San Francisco for a year. I worked for United Airlines. I wanted to be able to fly for free. And I had been for free my whole life because my dad used to work for United Airlines. But when you turn 26, they cut you off. And so I decided to get a job, and they were hiring in the Bay Area. I had already done some experiences there, had some friends there. So I was like, why not? I'll go live in San Francisco for a little bit. After that, I moved back to New Orleans, and my plan was to similarly keep my content going. I had been going to different like universities, different conferences related to science, health, and justice over that 3-year period too. I called myself the satellite student. And then I moved back to New Orleans, and my goal was to travel for 2 weeks, work for 2 weeks, travel for 2 weeks, work for 2 weeks. And then as soon as I got everything set up with that, 2 weeks later, COVID hit. And so it was so interesting. I'd actually basically signed up to rent a room in my friend's warehouse right next to the airport, because my plan was, again, I'm just working while I'm in town, and I'm gonna crash here, and then I'm gonna travel. So I don't need to have like a complete space, you know, here in the city. And then so I ended up spending the peak of the pandemic in a warehouse. A bedroom in a warehouse. Quite the experience, to say the least. But it was actually during that time that I came up with Bear Health, because at the peak of the pandemic, obviously, the virus is having the greatest effect on our community. And my aunt had texted me in about May of 2020 and said, hey, nephew, I think this would be a great time to kick off your healthy eating initiative again. Referring to my plant-based diet. And Bear Health is what I came up with. My first thought was like, we don't know how bad we're doing as it relates to our health in the Black community. And someone needs to communicate that clearly to us in a way that we can all understand. And in a way that as we change and live our lives, we're getting real-time feedback on the impact. Because I think we all know that we're not doing our best, but I don't think we know how bad we're doing and how each thing that we do on a daily basis affects the trajectory of our health and our current health status. And so that's where I had the idea of a health score. Obviously, I'm not the first person in the world to come up with a health score idea. And so I got on Google and looked up some companies, and I found a partner that whose relationship started, who we started a relationship with 5.5 years ago now. And they've invested probably $250,000 over that time in supporting our mission to maximize health in the Black community. Side note, about a month after that text from my aunt, the cross country and track coach at Xavier University reached out to me and asked me if I'd be interested in coaching because he'd pay for my school if I coached for them. I ran cross country and track at Xavier, my sister and I. And so that's why he was familiar with me. And I was like, well, you know, I'm in the middle of a pandemic. I had this one plan that I was about to, you know, go travel and do all of this. But since I'm not doing that anymore, I'm interested and I'm open. And Xavier had just released a match as a public health program with a concentration in health equity. And again, I had just come up with the idea for Bear Health. So I was like, why not? So I spent the next 2 years in graduate school refining the idea. And after I graduated, I started applying to startup accelerator and incubator programs, which are basically these boot camps for startups. And my that was my next layer of education. And here we are now. We've raised about 550K. We have our own app out officially in the App Store. We have over 3,000 users on the platform since we launched the app or the beta app about a year and a half ago. And yeah, now we're really primed, I think, to grow. We have our own space now, community space. But yeah, one vision a long time ago. Not that long ago, 5 years ago. And it's really coming to fruition.
And congratulations on all of that. I know how hard it is to conceptualize something and get it off the ground and get support, and you've done good with the funding and you have your space. So tell us now that we've landed the plane into what it is that you're currently doing, because I wanted to take people through that journey. I learned a lot about you, and I think it's different to read it off of somewhere than to hear it directly from the person. So I appreciate you sharing that. So what exactly is your mission? What are your goals? What exactly is Bear Health Systems?
Yeah, Bear Health, originally, again, our first goal was to communicate clearly to the Black community our current health status. And we do that through our health score. But I wanted to build a system. I didn't want to just host another webinar or workshop series where people get excited for a couple of weeks and then life happens and we fall off. So I wanted to develop a system to where I can follow up with people once they start trending in the wrong direction, right, and provide that feedback. The DACADU platform and technology enabled that really to a T. We're the only company using that platform in that capacity, but it was really perfect timing for us with the platform. So basically, we have an app. You download the app in the App Store. It's called Bear Health, BEHR Health, and you answer a few questions when you first download it, and then you get a health score between 0 and 1,000. And so this score represents your overall health. The lower your score, the faster you're aging, and the greater risk you have to have a significant health event on any given day. The higher your score, the slower you're aging, and the less likely you are to have a significant health event on any given day. And that could be a heart attack, diabetes episode, so on and so forth. And that score, I think, again, makes someone's health status real for them. Because you can go into the doctor and you get all of these numbers and they're like, oh, you're in this range, that range, so on and so forth. But, you know, a lot of us are still like, I don't know what this means, because most of us are literate, but most of us aren't health literate. Right. And I think that's an important distinction, especially as people get into more personalized, you know, health and stuff like that. So yeah, our goal is to create this platform. We created it. And then as I'm in the program, the Masters of Public Health program at Xavier, I'm learning about all of the impact that social determinants of health have on health outcomes, and how 60% of health outcomes or health disparities are driven by social determinants of health. And for those who don't know, social determinants of health are access to education, access to economic opportunity, access to healthcare, and, you know, availability of these things that make it easier to be healthy and achieve your health goals. Direct correlation between how much money someone makes and how long they live, how much education they have and how long they live. And once I understood these things, neighborhood safety, right? And how long someone lives. So once I started understanding these things, I understood that it was a lot more than just about lifestyle. And some of these in lifestyle behaviors or poor lifestyle behaviors are really downstream effects of these upstream infrastructure issues, right? Social determinants of health. And so that almost made me stop pursuing the build of Bear Health, because I was like, well, I should just go into policy and get policies changed, and I'll have a significant impact. Would be the most efficient way to get changed. But there's so many things that have to be in place for policies to work in favor of Black people. And honestly, we know that that really has not ever been done. and what I learned is that our current system is equipped to serve Black people. It just wasn't designed to, and so it's not. And it was one class that I took about bioinformatics and the importance of data for creating change. And that's ultimately what led me to continue building Bear after the first year in my program. And what we created now is what we call the Black Electronic Health Record. So we have two sides of what we do. We have a health app, a health and wellness platform that people can use to improve their personal health, track every aspect of their health from their mental well-being, their nutrition, their mindfulness, their sleep, their medical health, their family medical history, so on and so forth. And then all of our user data goes into what we call the Black Electronic Health Record. That's actually what Bear Health stands for. And it's a combination of all of our user health insights. So not only do individual users have their health score, we have a community level health score. So there's the New Orleans, the average health score in New Orleans, the average health score in Atlanta, the average health score in LA. And we'll be able to see these trends, the health score trends in real time within each city, within each state, within each zip code or partnering organization that we work with. And we can use that aggregate data to inform and drive public health interventions, policies, and also, and more importantly, evaluate the impact of these things in relatively real time. Because usually when you roll out a policy, roll out an intervention, it's years before you really can evaluate the data. Oftentimes, you know, public health institutions will go into communities, they'll do a needs assessment, understand what the challenges are in that community, and then go take a couple of years to develop and deploy a program. Well, so much has already changed in that community since you did the needs assessment. We need to understand how things are affecting people in real time so that we can then pivot in real time. And that is the tool that we've created with Bear Health. So again, we're one part of health and wellness platform. Second, a data infrastructure, which ultimately will be owned by our community, so that when institutions and entities are interested in using our data for research purposes or, you know, any purpose that we agree with, we can then go to that community, go to that specific zip code and say, hey, this institution or this city is interested in doing research on our community, on this zip code. Are we interested in, are we open to that? And how much are we charging? Because then now we can take some of that capital and improve the community in the way that we and the community know is best. So that's really what Bear Health is. And I'm sure the vision will evolve more and more from here. Because you know, moving away from it being focused primarily as a digital health platform and more of a passport to a healthy experience is really where we are now. And part of why we have this space here in New Orleans called Bear Connect, where the theme is find your community, build your community at Bear Connect. Community is what I regard right now as the solution to most of our problems. And if people can find and build communities that are rooted in health, then health isn't this extra thing that people have to do. You know, the thing that they have to add to their schedule is just a part of their life because the community that they're around, that's what they identify with. And just by being around them, you kind of have to start running more. You kind of have to start better, you know? So it's not an extra thing, not an extra thought process. It's just, you know, part of your experience. And so Bear Health, in addition to being a digital health platform, we're building a health-promoting ecosystem where just by having our app, you have access to everything that we promote, and all of what we promote will be health-promoting. For example, you can get discounts at local juice shops and restaurants here in the city. You have access to our co-working lounge. You have access to hosting events and meetups at our space. And again, all of these environments will be health promoting. And you can just think about it as Black people are here. We have a desire to be healthy over here. And right now the system is, you know, disintegrated. And this tool will serve as a filter for you to find everything that you need as it relates to reaching your health goals.
I think what you're doing is brilliant, because you know, when you look at what's one of the most valuable things that we have, and that's data. Mm-hmm. And you've been able to create a way to capture this data, but leverage it as a way to have people invest back into the communities. Like that part that you said about the community having a say in what happens with that data, I feel is what I was hoping to hear from you. Because immediately my mind was going to, all right, you're getting this information, and then you laid out a great model for building community, and I think it's also helping with their health as well, about mm-hmm. them at an individual level. So I feel like, you know, you're doing a great job with what you're doing, and I want to say this as we start to wind down: where can people get more information about what it is you're doing? I know we didn't even tap into, if you want to talk a little bit about the Barathon, what mm-hmm. that is, how can people get information about me?
Yeah, I mean, you can find us online really across all platforms at Bear Health. Again, that's BEHR, Black Electronic Health Record Health. You can find me, same thing across all platforms, at Kwame Terra, KwameTerra. Yeah, and just download our app and be a part of what we're building, be a part of the Black Electronic Health Record. And you know, again, our vision for this will evolve, because as we expand beyond the United States, you know, there were different problems. And really what Bear will ultimately be is a collective record of our health and progress as a people, and a platform where we can share resources and ultimately solve all of our problems ourselves. Because obviously the system is kind of dead set on making it harder for us. And again, remember, that's okay. That is their prerogative. But we have a different vision for ourselves and for our lives. I did forget to frame up the problem a little bit, which is specifically here in the U.S. There's about a 6 to 7 year life expectancy gap between Black people and the rest of the population. Average life expectancy in the U.S. is about 78, now I think 79 years. Average life expectancy in the Black community is about 72, and I think it's getting lower. That 6-7 year life expectancy gap, when you extrapolate that across the entire population, 50 billion people, we're on track to lose 268 million years of time as a people. That's just here in the U.S. because we're just not living as long. So we don't have as much opportunity, in addition to already not having as much opportunity. And we have to get that time back, because that time is more time with our wealth building. That's more time to connect with our families, pass down wisdom, so on and so forth. Time is our most valuable asset. And so we created Bear Health to recapture that time, first and foremost by letting everybody know where we are, and then collectively creating visions for where we want to go and measuring it along the way. Right? This idea worked and it improved this community by this much. Let's do more of that. Right? Let's pull our resources together and do more of that. And then most importantly, we get to measure it and see that we did it. There's nothing quite like seeing that you're accomplishing what you envision. And it, I mean, that is the fuel of life, truly.
So just letting you guys know, thank you so much for listening to watching the Vegans Explore podcast. We are a daily podcast, so we love telling stories of people who are doing powerful things within a community, but we also want to tell your stories. You may not be on a show for 30 minutes. You may just want to say a thing for a minute. If you go to vegansexplore.com/podcast, there is a way for you to tell your story, give a shout out, maybe talk about a restaurant, a business, a nonprofit that you want us to talk about a little bit more. And we may take some of those clips and put it on our episodes. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you, Kwame Terra, for being on the podcast. And as we always do, here is your moment from the heart with our guest, Kwame Terra.
I just wanted to share that when when we get into life, especially early on, we're excited by what the future might hold. And what the future holds is the potential that is inside of us. I think as we grow up, we forget about that potential. And it's important not to forget about it, because you are who you are, but you're also all of the potential that you are. And there's so much of you that has not been unlocked yet due to a lack of information. And I know that probably sounds a little simple, but what I mean by a lack of information is information in the form of experiences, information in the form of connections, information in the form of trying things that you've never done before. Because as you have these new experiences, new genes literally program and will turn on inside of you, and you become more than you're showing up today. We don't know the limits of that human potential. And my mission in life really is to help break down barriers, real or imagined, between people and their full potential. And so, yeah, reflect on that. Where are you? Are you one of those who have decided that this is more or less it, or that you know everything that you're going to know? You're just like me and anybody else. Like, there's so much more to us than we even know. And I think it's our job, our duty, moral obligation, actually, to become all that we can. Because if we're not all that we can be, we suffer more than we have to, and so do those around you. So we have a challenge coming up. Speaking of becoming more than you thought you could be, last year I did 2 million steps in 30 days to break the world record for the most steps in 30 days. And at the end of that challenge, people kept asking me what was next. Well, this year in April, we're having our official launch of Bear Health with a challenge called the Bearathon. It'll be a month-long challenge where myself and the entire community will attempt to cover enough distance to reach the moon. The moon is about 239,000 miles away, and we need about 2,000 to 3,000 people on our platform, each doing about 7,000 steps a day over the course of a month to achieve that goal. I know we can do it, but we need everybody. I know that I cannot cover 239,000 miles individually in a month. So if you want to be a part of that challenge, it's free to download the app for the first 30 days. And yeah, hope to see you in there.